you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. Well, I'm really pleased to have back with me. He is an associate professor of political science at Kentucky State University, author of the books Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About, Hate Crime Hoax, and The $50,000 Question. I first saw him on Tucker Carlson. It's been a few years back now. And brought him on the program, have so enjoyed his visits with us. He was actually here also with Bart Markoy in one of our interviews that we did, talking about, of course, his expertise in government and political science. Today, I've got a couple of neat things for us to talk about, and I want to welcome Dr. Wilford Riley to the program. Dr. Riley, welcome. Good to have you.
Great to be back on.
Well, sir, there's some things in the headlines that really are very much in line with one of the first books that really made your name and public, I don't know, persona, splash, however you want to look at it. Hate Crime Hoax. And of course, I'm talking about the Jesse Smollett trial that's going on. As first of all, how did you feel about them deciding to go ahead and prosecute this situation when, of course, Kim Fox was going to, hide this, bury this, not let this move forward?
Well, man, it's about time in terms of the prosecution. Obviously, now, Chicago is my hometown. It's a beautiful city, but it's one of the most corrupt cities in, at very least, the USA. I mean, it's been famous for that since Al Capone's day. Then you go through Mayor Daley. I mean, today, I mean, the diversity of the people involved might vary, but you've seen a lot of the same politics. So originally, when Jesse Smollett was charged with this crazily inventive hate crime hoax, where he had a couple of his gym buddies who were Nigerian brothers, I believe, dressed up like white Donald Trump MAGA fighters with ski masks on and red hats and so on and pretend to beat him up. When he did all this, he got caught. He wasted about $200,000 worth of police man time. Originally, there were 6 low-grade but real felony charges that were going to be filed against him. And the prosecutor, Kim Fox, who has been accused of corruption on several occasions, threw those charges out. And there's at least some allegation that Michelle Obama's staff, that very high-powered people, were involved with this. Jesse Smollett was certainly wired into the wealthy in Chicago, to the black community in Chicago, so on. Now, after just incredible public pressure, I mean, we've all seen this case. It's, a Saturday Night Live skit, it's a Dave Chappelle skit. They're bringing the charges back. So Smollett is currently facing 3 primary charges and 3 secondary charges. So it looks like he's got about the same chance of going to jail that he did before. So I'm pleased and surprised to see him actually charged with anything as a starting point.
Well, it's interesting because, we remember that Jesse Smollett was, a star on Empire. And some of what was being discussed was that they might have been writing him out of the show. And so he was looking for some way to, embellish his stardom, so to speak. But this is a truly horrific thing that he did. In relationship to this continued effort to drive divisiveness and create a race civil war again in our country.
Well, that's something I talk about in Hate Crime Hoax. I mean, the potential risk of this kind of thing, if people think that blacks, or for that matter, whites, are constantly under attack, especially given that this is not true, it's a dangerous storyline to run with. So that's a possible result of what Jesse Smollett did. Yeah, the motivations here are fascinating. So, I mean, at the individual level, what you're saying is correct. Jesse Smollett thought his role was going to be reduced on this show, Empire, which is about, sexually flexible urban rappers, as I understand. I mostly watch TV if there's a ball involved, or maybe horses.
Okay, but, good for you.
So, but that's apparently it. It's a soap opera for men here, whatever it is. His role was getting reduced, and he wanted to stay on the show. I think at a deeper level, though, there's a question here of why victimization has gotten power in our society. that says a lot about kind of this diverse urban upper class that we have. And what Smollett assumed was that if he were to fake an incident where he was attacked by kind of the enemy, by these heartland, probably white Donald Trump guys, there would be so much sympathy for him that he would be allowed to remain on the show. And what's more, I don't think he thought that anyone was going to really investigate this, which implies to me that there are, in fact, I know now, but this implies to me there are a lot of these cases in the background, and Smollett was probably aware of a couple of them. But his thought was that he would go to the police, he would say that this had happened, and yes, he would be reinstated in the show because he would be too sympathetic to do away with. And that kind of says a lot about where you're coming from.
Well, and another piece to this that's interesting is apparently there was a camera that was nearby, and they went, according to the testimony the other day, they actually went and practiced this. I mean, this was not, they did a dry run where they practiced and pretended, and Jesse scoped this area out, assuming that it would be on camera and he would have the camera evidence, except for he made a small mistake, which is probably why he's neither director nor producer, and that is the camera was pointed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, so I mean, my first reaction when you started telling me this was, well, these boys are actors. Every one of these guys had come from the set of Empire, which is a top 10 show. So I mean, he knew how to plan this out.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, I think your description, that's why he's not the executive producer, is pretty on point, because this was a very stupid thing to try to do. He apparently didn't understand that, I mean, those detectives from the Chicago PD are professionals. They're going to be able to take the camera, and they're going to be able to take the film roll, and they're going to be able to zoom in so they can see little things like the fact that the face of the guy attacking you is black. You know, I mean, it was stuff like that. They were able to identify the guy walking past Smollett and bumping him at the start of this footage within a week or two of opening the case. So when you're really going up against pros, like a major police department, the FBI, what a lot of these hoaxers and a lot of these Antifa clowns and so on don't expect is that they're going to be dealing with smart people that have a 2 or 4 year degree and that have looked through 1,000 rolls of film. And that's how they got Jesse. But yeah, at the most basic level, he wanted this to be caught on tape. He wanted there to be evidence of this. It would have been a lot smarter for Jesse Smollett to claim that this had happened in Lincoln Park. If you know how Chicago's structured, if he had come out of the park bleeding, and there are a lot of people mugged at the Chicago park, and he had said, I was attacked by two Caucasian guys, it was racial, they put this noose on me, there would have never been any proof that it hadn't happened. People might have had their suspicions, but you know that the mainstream sort of regime media would have kept the lid tightly enough on that you would have been called a racist if you brought it up. So that would have been the smarter move, but he did it in the downtown district, as you said, right under a camera. Although, if you got the camera backward, I mean, it must have been the next building fell me. But anyway, and yeah, that wasn't the best way to do this, actually, fortunately for, you know, Lady Justice, if not Mr. Smollett.
You mentioned, though, that, you know, the deeper issues that are associated with this and the fact that there were other situations that were similar, where the stories that were put out by mainstream media just didn't match the facts. And you bring a lot of those things up in your book, Hate Crime Hoax. What was it about that whole situation that, you know, that led you to say, look, I need to, from an academic perspective, take a broader look at this situation and try to help educate people? Because you're an educator. That's who you are. That's what you do. You teach people. Why was this an important topic to teach people about?
Well, I think there are two questions there. I mean, first of all, at the individual level, why did I and so many other people in the academic community, black business, social science community, so on, think this was probably a hoax from the beginning? Because it was clearly a hoax. I mean, what Smollett claimed, just breaking this down blow by blow, is that in an area of Chicago, Streeterville, which is like Streeterville River North, is the Chicago Integrated Club District. So in an area that's probably, you know, 10% gay, 25% black, 5% Trump voters, he claimed that he'd been attacked by two guys that were wearing full-on patriotic ski masks, bright red MAGA hats, They were carrying, what, like a knotted rope, hangman's noose, and a gallon bottle of bleach? And they had just walked past, you know, all these clubs, American Junkie and Murphy's and so on. No one had fought them. No one had stopped them. It's 2 o'clock a.m., by the way, on a weekend day. It's the coldest day of the year. Smollett says that he goes outside to get, like, a turkey salad sub or something from Subway. Even in Chicago, I'm not sure the restaurant's open, but that's beside the point. That's the most believable detail. You know, he goes outside. He's attacked by these two big Caucasian fighting men. You know, there's a 150-pound gay guy. He beats them both off, pushes them back, let's say. You know, and he then runs away with a rope around his neck, holding a sandwich. It, just listening to the story, if I were a police detective, I probably would have broken up laughing during this to some extent. And the people are, everyone, and they keep doing this to us. Like, if you're a normal taxpayer, black guy, white guy, whatever, people keep presenting you with these ridiculous stories. Like, I identify as having no gender whatsoever. And the test is, will you just sit there and listen to it and not make fun of this person and not crack a joke and not leave the room? It's almost submission to the group that's moving into power. And that's what this story was. So whether or not people said this publicly, it was very obvious. Like, this probably didn't happen. And then you started seeing evidence come out. It turned out these two Nigerian guys who were well-known as showrunners on Empire had received $2,500 checks from Mr. Smollett. So that's why individually we knew the story was false. The bigger story is what it represents.
Right. And let's get into that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get into that when we get back. And then we'll talk some more about your other book, which is Taboo, the 10 Facts That You Can't Talk About. My special guest, Dr. Wilfred Riley, will be back with more with Dr. Riley coming up after this. Get more at the website, younggenerationradio.com. And don't forget, you can always get this in podcast form to listen to later at your convenience, also at the website, younggenerationradio.com. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Back with more right after this. Now is a critical time to be vigilant in the defense of our freedom. There's no better way to do so than by joining the Association of Mature American Citizens, AMAC. AMAC is one of the fastest growing conservative organizations in America. Well over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by regular folks who feel the same way you do. You're not alone. AMAC believes in and stands up for the values that made America so great. We're fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of federal government. We believe in the sanctity of our Constitution. So if you're 50 or over and hold to traditional American values, you no longer have to feel alone. Call the Association for Mature American Citizens, AMAC, and get great discounts and support your values. Call today, 855-696-7930, 855-696-7930. Use the code Pastor Greg, get your first year absolutely free. Do you find yourself turning on the news and feeling hopeless? Open borders, spending gone crazy, the prospect of more mandates, lockdowns, inflation, and the list goes on? There's something you can do. Buy from companies that believe what you and I believe. We need to stick together now more than ever. And there's been one company willing to stand with you since 2012, Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They offer nationwide coverage using the same towers as all the major carriers. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget and discounts for veteran and first responder heroes and multi-line accounts. They are 100% U.S.-based, providing exceptional customer service. Most importantly, Patriot Mobile shares our values and supports organizations fighting for religious freedom, constitutional rights, sanctity of life, first responders, and veterans. Use the code CHOSEN for free activation. Call 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Call today. Use the code CHOSEN, patriotmobile.com/chosen.
Thank you for tuning into Chosen Generation. Chosen Generation is about equipping, encouraging, and challenging this generation to engage culture and to fulfill God's plan and purpose for our city, county, state, and nation to be the Christian influence and light that we have been called to be. Pastor Greg is committed to seeing God's life-changing power work in you. If you need prayer today or have a question, you can reach us at 830-446-3624. 830-446-3624. If your church or group would like to have Pastor Greg come and share his passion to raise up a chosen generation, he is available to bring that same life-changing message and anointing to your event. Again, that number is 830-446-3624. 830-446-3624. Give us a call and keep on listening, because you are God's chosen generation.
Are you getting up in the morning feeling like you and your bed had a bad night, still tired? Stop! It doesn't have to be that way. That's why Mike Lindell started MyPillow, and after his success helping people sleep better with the pillow, Mike decided to go all in. He found Giza cotton for the best sheets and created the ultimate mattress topper. And since stores won't carry his product, he's passing that savings on to you. Use the code Pastor Greg for incredible discounts and help feed starving children. Call today.
800-662-9236. 800-662-9236.
Nowhere else are you going to be able to sleep well and know that you have fed starving kids. Use the code Pastor Greg. Call MyPillow today.
800-662-9236. 800-662-9236.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Sorry about that, folks. I'm looking for an article. I love the Epoch Times, but I got to tell you, their search engine on their site is absolutely useless, unfortunately. But anyway, Wilfred Riley is my guest. We're talking about the issue of hoaxes and race crime hate hoax, and his book Hate Crime Hoax specifically addresses these issues. Dr. Riley, you were beginning to talk to us and share with us about the Smollett situation. You talked about it on an individual basis, but there's a larger narrative there that you really went after relative to your book. And it's, I guess it's the victimization and the elevation of victimization.
Yeah, well, the theme of the book, Hate Crime Hoax, and although this book was written from the right, I mean, it's been pretty widely reviewed. It's up on Amazon. It was a bestseller for a while. And I think part of the reason it was kind of hard to ignore is that the book documented something that a lot of intelligent citizens had been seeing since maybe Tawana Brawley or maybe Duke LaCrosse, if you've been following media for a while, which is that a bunch of these high profile, a majority of these high profile racial conflict incidents have turned out to be fakes for a very long time. I mean, you can go through Covington Catholic, Duke LaCrosse, Erica Thomas, you know, Yasmin Saweed, the torn hijab on the 6th train. You know, Nikki Jolly, the trans woman who said her house was burnt down by bandits, almost all of the burnt black churches, you know, Drake University, Goucher College, Wisconsin Parkside, every one of the nooses on that campus and many others, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of people have been noticing that these stories inevitably seem to collapse, that when a quote-unquote noose is found on a college campus, it's almost inevitably the gee rope on a construction site, because there aren't a bunch of Klansmen running around in integrated blue-collar neighborhoods in Ohio or Pennsylvania. There haven't been since 1870. So the book kind of puts that together. Essentially, I compile a data set, which is available to anyone to reach out following the show. I'm just Wilfred Riley online to request it. But I put together a data set of about 500 of these hoaxes, and I said, look, there are less than 7,000 hate crimes a year. Less than 1 in 10 of them, so 700 a year, get the kind of media coverage necessary for me to really track them down and find out what the conclusion of the case was. And out of a set of maybe 3,000 prominent cases, I found 500 major hoaxes just over a couple of years. Wow. And that doesn't mean that there was a conviction rate of 100% in all the other cases. The conviction rate in hate crime cases is about 6%. So I wrote this book, and I think it's a pretty solid social science work. And it's, you know, people have criticized it. Brian Levin says that my numbers are too high. Others say they're too low. But the reality that Covington Catholic wasn't real, and Jussie Smollett wasn't real, and Yasmin Saweed wasn't real, and Duke Lacrosse wasn't real, and so on down the line, I think that the bird-watching fights that we see in the New York Times weren't real. University of Missouri wasn't real. I think that that made a point to a lot of people, and it gets, and I think this is where you're going, almost into a broader narrative, which is that there's this storyline about the country, that the USA is riven by, you know, there's massive amounts of quote-unquote white privilege, there's a near race war level conflict between blacks and whites and Mexican Americans, interracial crime, the police are going crazy, that's Black Lives Matter, they're shooting young men, especially black men, wildly for no reason, systemic racism. And the next book I wrote, Taboo, really looks at all of this, as well as some claims on the hard right, and says there's not much evidence for this. The richest groups in the country are Indians and Nigerians. There's just, you can like that or dislike it, but there's no evidence that there's this near war level conflict going on. Again, that seems to be the latest panic storyline from the media. It's replaced child kidnapping in China and so on.
The drive, I guess the issue to me is that they're driving this wedge, trying to create this division. You have, you know, stories about the new Black Panthers, for example, that were standing on the steps of the courthouse where the Arbery case was taking place, basically saying, watch out, you know, it's coming for you. And then you have the guy, Daryl Brooks, in Waukesha, who not long after that, you know, plows into a Christmas parade, and there were certain elements that were saying, well, you know, he was just, you know, taking revenge back against white oppressors. They want this narrative, Dr. Riley, to incite us and to pit us against one another.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. As both a social scientist and a boss, and I've talked to pre-executive for a pretty major university, I've talked to friends in the media about this, and I've kind of asked them what the hell they're doing. And it's an interesting question. I don't know if all of them want this. I think the media operates with a set of really perverse incentives. Not so much when you're talking about your show has a set religious or political audience, or it's not so much for me where I have a backup job and I can choose what appearance to do. But if you're running a full-time show for MSNBC, I mean, your incentive is to draw as many eyeballs to your show as you can to compete with Fox and CNN. And secondarily, it's frankly to sell Ford trucks and, let's say, men's health pills to that audience. You know, television media specifically exists as an ad sales vehicle. There's almost no public television in the way you could see sometimes with AM radio. So you've got that set of perverse incentives. You want to get people rage clicking. And you combine that with political bias. Like, if you exempt only Fox, the mainstream broadcast media leans about 95% to the left. Mm-hmm. That's pretty famous data from Pew in 2005, I believe. So, 2004. So, when you put those two things together, you get this storyline that keeps coming out to people. Do they want to provoke us? Do they actually want the kind of white, tough guy backlash you're now seeing with the PBs, the Proud Boys, and so on? I can't imagine they do, but it's something that's going to happen. It's like it didn't matter whether the lumber companies in the 1980s wanted to cut down all the forests while we were competing with the Japanese. If you cut trees at a certain rate, they ain't going to grow back anymore. So that's the risk. That's what the media is presenting. And yes, it is this combined storyline. It's white privilege, cultural appropriation, CRT, BLM. I mean, obviously, as I said, I'm openly on the right. But all this stuff goes together. And I think what I'm saying is fair. It's this sort of package. We need to change the country to fix these problems. And in reality, I think if you unpack a lot of these issues, the problems don't seem to really exist. American police are more violent than British or, you know, Swiss police. But that's also because our large population with urban black guys, quote unquote rednecks, 2,000 mile long border with Mexico is very different from the population of Switzerland. So when you break that down by race, you find that the groups most likely to be shot by the police are poor whites and recent Latino immigrants. The narrative that we're getting is mostly BS. The only question is how intentional it is that it's being fed to us. But it's very problematic. I mean, you can't, when you talk about an armed black militia, you can't promote that as healthy for very long without getting armed white militias and armed conservative militias and so on down the line. And I don't think dueling militias in the streets, which is what we saw in Kenosha, is what anybody wants.
No. Well, no, we don't. And we don't want businesses being burned down either. And you and I have talked about that in the past as well. Burning down businesses is no way to express it. You know, the Constitution guarantees a peaceful assembly to redress grievances. Your evidences show, first of all, that the grievances that are supposedly being propagated out there are not in actuality real. They are imagined. They are created. And so then one has to ask the question, why are they being created? Who's behind the creation? And is there an agenda? You know, it's only a conspiracy until it becomes a factual reality. And then it's no longer a conspiracy anymore. We know, I believe, from reading my Bible, that there is, in fact, an evil force that is afoot. And we, on the other side, our job is to propagate and to speak out the truth in love and hopefully lead those that are in that other environment to come to a place of freedom and liberty, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Thank you, Dr. Wilford. I appreciate you being with me today, folks. I'm out of time.
At the end of the day, when I stand before my God, I do not want him to ask me, what did you do with the world that I sent my son to die for and redeem? How did you fight the good fight to share the good news and keep evil in check? How did you shine your light and be a beacon of truth in the darkness? Did you shrink back in fear when they demanded you change my message? Did you call evil good and good evil? Did you forsake my love for that of another, lying with the adulterer and setting up a new idol in your life? Have you defiled yourself through compromise and tolerance of that which I call an abomination? Have you innocent blood on your hands for the children murdered on your watch and the young ones perverted in their way by evil men, seeking their own comfort and reviling me? No. At the end of the day, I want him to simply say, the evidence is in. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. I love my God, and I love his creation, and I will go to my grave telling the world that evil is evil, and only God is good, and Jesus came to save the world. That no matter the evil in the world, I will never give up, and in spite of the hate, I will love in truth. God bless you all, and may love remove the veil, so you all might enter into his rest.
Are you confused and stressed by the news and our culture? I'm Maria Baer with the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. I want to invite you to join me and John Stone Street every week right here on this station for Breakpoint This Week. We provide a Christian perspective on the news that gives clarity, confidence, and courage for your daily life. Don't miss it.